我哋今日咧有两个比较重要嘅讨论事项，一个咧就系刚刚 Vincent 提到嘅 Harbor Planning Guideline。咁我哋就请啊 Dr. Andrew Thompson， 佢咧就系 Harbor Planning Principle 嘅 Task Group 嘅 Convener。咁佢咧有一张 paper， 就系代表阿 Vincent 佢哋个 subcom 咧，系向大家做个报告嘅。咁Andrew, you're going to present the draft guidelines, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to ask members really for the two resolutions that we're putting through today. Perhaps I'll remark that the Harbour Planning Guidelines have been circulated prior to Christmas, so members have had opportunity to review them in the draft form prior to bringing them to HEC for this set of resolutions. But the purpose of the paper number 4, 2007, is to ask two things. Firstly, A, for members to comment on the Harbour Planning Guidelines at this stage today, and then secondly, B, to agree to adopt the Harbour Planning Guidelines as a working draft for further consultation amongst the broader stakeholders. And in that regard, that would include members, but indeed members of the public as well, as this is an open forum. So as the paper is now open to members, then basically all members of the public as well as the members of the HEC are able to comment on them. And to set it, we've set a deadline for the comments to come in. So I think it's really the floor is open to members to comment. And at that point in time, if members subsequent to those comments feel they're open to accept them as a working draft, then we would seek that endorsement also, and then finally to allow a period of consultation among the broader community. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. 不知大家對於呢份 draft Harbour Planning Guideline 有冇啲咩意見呢？ Louis, please.
I think for the sake of Andrew, I speak in English. Chairman, I have presented this set of draft Harbour Planning Guidelines to the Real Estate Developers Association, which is the association that I represent. And in principle, they have no serious objection to the guidelines, but they do have a few comments that I would like to bring to this meeting. The first one is that we believe that the Harbour Planning Guidelines should be applied to government plans and developments as well as to private sector projects. So it is one set of rules for everybody, public and private. And the second point is that in relation to paragraph 2.2c, which is on, I think, page 4 of the guidelines, of the draft guidelines, we would suggest that for the private developments, it should only be applicable to those projects that would result in material change to development density. In other words, if it is some very minor changes, there would not be any need to bring this to the HEC. And the third and last point, which we believe is the most important one, is that these guidelines should under no circumstances be allowed to erode private property rights, which is being protected by Article 105 of the Basic Law. And Chairman, that is the view of the association that I'm representing.
Thank you, Louis. Andrew, you have any response to that?
No, I think those comments sound reasonable, Chairman. I would add that we've received other comments from other forum which haven't been able to, because of the late arrival of those, that we haven't been integrated into this current version. Some are material to the extent of changing the suggestion of changing pictures, etc. Others are, you know, small amendments. But there's some more fundamental comments as well about the extent to which the guidelines respect the spirit of the principles. So that, again, I think this is a question of whether or not the guidelines mitigate the principles, and I think these are quite common to readers' comments in some regards. It's who do they apply to, and how far will they go to deliver on the principles, or do in fact the guidelines attempt to work as a mitigating factor to the principles? And I think we'll have to shake these out over the period of consultation, and ultimately deliver the final draft. But I would think that the comments are well received from reader, and we'll work within the confines of the task group to respond to those and see how they can be adopted within the final version.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. May come.
I forget about the setting. thank you, Chairman. For the benefit of Andrew, I'm going to speak in English as well. I also circulated the guidelines among members of CSN at Visioning and Harbour, and they've given me some comments, but due to my very tight schedule at work, my comments may not be well integrated. So, Andrew, I promise you to give you an integrated set of comments, but I'll just go through this. Some of the members in CLH kind of mentioned that, you know, having these guidelines is good, but then we should not lose sight of the importance of integrated harbour planning, you know, which is the spirit of having the harbour planning principles. So, you know, that's like a sort of direct comment on the guidelines, but I think we should sort of, you know, bear that in mind. And also, somehow, in the guidelines somewhere, can we emphasize the importance of placemaking strategies? Because, you know, so I think that's related to the integrated planning dimension and also, you know, placemaking strategy. And this is very important. And also, since we don't really know the fate of HEC and the future of these guidelines. And since the harbour is so important to us, it's our city's natural asset, can this actually eventually be part of the Hong Kong planning standards and guidelines rather than as a standalone document? Although we all know that being into HKPSG doesn't mean that, you know, it will be respected. But it seems like it would be better, especially if we don't really know how certain HEC, you know, whether we have a new life or not. And if we turn to page 3, which starts to set out the guideline according to the 9 topics, our members in CLH kind of think that one issue that we need to resolve is about the definition of overriding public needs. From this set of guidelines, it seems like as long as you know, our city is not doing any reclamation, we're satisfying overriding public needs. But in the process of HEC's work, we notice that because we don't have a definite definition of this term, a lot of interesting, especially marine-based projects or activities cannot be carried out because we are afraid that, you know, it will breach the overriding public needs definition. So somehow we need to tackle that conceptual issue. Otherwise, having this guideline would not really help to produce a very vibrant waterfront. Regarding public engagement, we don't really understand the rationale behind, you know, why setting this 20-hectare sort of criteria, because we think that all the projects should go through public engagement, and also should not be at, okay, page 4, first and second lines mention that public views, including those of HEC, should be solicited at an early stage before a formulation of detailed proposal. Since we've done projects which try to involve the general public to do envisioning, which is really way before detailed proposal, so whether, you know, we should engage the general public at an early stage so that we can include interesting creative ideas and also ensure smooth implementation afterwards. So that's you know, what some members have mentioned. As for for how to engage the general public, somehow perhaps the district councils should be involved as well, because they are at the local level, you know, they are in touch with the general public, and you know, I think they are more skillful in terms of like really going to the general public rather than just, you know, those who are involved in harbourfront development. And finally, about public engagement, is that should we also have some guidelines about how to deal with the comments received? Because here I just talk about consultation. So what? You know, do we just consult for consultation's sake? So that's about engagement. Page 5, land use planning. Well, if you know the members of CLH, you understand that they also concern a lot about marine uses. So they're a bit upset because it focuses more on land uses. And they argue that, say, for example, land use point B, one member argued that typhoon shelters actually are not land use, you know, it's marine use. Should we say land and marine use planning? You know, but once we touch on marine use, then the concept or the idea of overriding public needs need to be addressed. About open spaces, page 7, and also the temporary land uses on page 18. Basically, these are about, you know, temporary land uses or vacant land. But members are concerned about, okay, what are we going to do with incompatible land uses? It seems like the guidelines have not really addressed incompatible land uses. And then page 9 about utility installations. The contents actually address infrastructure as well. So should we say infrastructure and utility installations? So that, you know, when we put in infrastructure. So because utilities seems smaller scale, but infrastructure could be bigger. So, you know, that can be addressed. Page 17 about sustainable development. Actually, in the Wan Chai project, a set of sustainability indicators has been developed, and I think, you know, that's quite useful as a checklist as well. I mean, personally, I'm working on a sustainability indicator project for SD Fund, and I find having indicators, you know, as more objective measurements are quite useful. Somehow that set of indicators can also be reviewed or appended as a reference document for guidance. And page 18, when we talk about temporary land uses, can we also encourage developments which will, if a piece of land is not due for development, then the first priority should also be for enhancement purposes, you know, rather than, you know, for other uses. Can that be emphasized? And you know who always concerned about the billboard, you know, whether that can be removed so that we can have visual access to the waterfront. Some minor comments about wordings. I think the wordings are quite polite. In some places they think it should be used. We should use should, but then it used could. You know, so that you're encouraging people. You're not really asking them to do what should be done. But I don't know whether that can be reviewed. So I hope I. Oh, okay, and one point is that members concern a lot about good design, because these guidelines, you know, just talk about general what you could do, but then, you know, it doesn't really emphasize enough about having good design, using good materials for harbourfront enhancement. So can that also be emphasized? So I think I kind of like cover most of their comments.
And you have to bear in mind that Mikem is a teacher, so he takes it as your term paper and go. But anyway, any response to Mikem?
No, Chairman. I think we take all of the comments and we work to assimilate them as is most applicable over the course of the next couple of months. I think I came into this knowing that could do better was the grade possibly that we were going to get, but I think we've had a good start, and it's a framework for discussion, and that's the spirit of intent of putting the paper together, is to ultimately end up with a very workable and a very pragmatic tool that can support the planning principles and be adopted. I do agree that the should versus could and the tone can be more or less encouraging depending on how you interpret it. But I think what we've got to get is we've got to get the right level of detail and something which all sectors buy into. And I agree with Lewis's point that this needs to apply to all. So there has to be broad acceptance and broad buy-in to these principles and guidelines. So this is the process of getting that buy-in, and all the comments are very welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. Any other comments? WK, please.
Yes, thank you. Well, I think, Andrew, when we first received these guidelines a few months ago, I sent you some comments, but maybe it's worth repeating a couple of those comments that have not been mentioned. I'll just mention a couple of specific ones and then some general ones. On cultural heritage, for instance, I think it's right to put it here. But I recall making a point, actually, before people begin to talk about intangible heritage. I think it is the kind of thing that should be considered. Of course, intangible heritage, and I don't just mean collective memory, right, but intangibles. They are not definitive, so you don't have to be too definitive. But after all, this is a guideline. So if some wording can be built into it so that we shall consider not just the structures or the, I think the wording here is buildings, not just those, but those factors that have a heritage implication. That would make the guideline more complete. To give an example, in our encounters, for instance, in Wan Chai, I think the typhoon shelter is both a tangible and intangible heritage. And in the case of Kai Tak, I think the runway itself is very tangible, but aviation, that activity, is more an intangible type of heritage, which we would like to see reflected somehow in the overall planning, although not necessarily the whole runway being used for aviation. So that's a kind of consideration which will be useful. That deals with heritage. And on page 9, on utilities, personally, I would have liked some wording built into it to say that utility installations should be, or rather, should not be built as far as possible, right? So that you end up only having the really essential utility installations. Of course, in the current wording, there's already phrases to say to minimize the impact or whatever. But I think before you minimize the impact, the first thing to do is try not to build them in the first place, unless it's absolutely essential. I think the harbourfront is too good to be used for utility installations. And if they are essential, then, of course, all these conditions come in. But still, reading the two paragraphs there isn't a very explicit requirement to say that they have to be pretty, right? Or at least they have to look less offensive, something like that. So I just want some strengthening of the wording there. A couple of more general points. Although I know this deals with planning and doesn't really get into the territory of transport, I think since one of the principles is sustainable development, the harbour planning principle, maybe some mention of sustainable transport will be useful. In the sense that in planning the harbour front areas, there should be more consideration given to more sustainable types of transport rather than less sustainable types of transport. And then finally, from our experience in public engagement, the concept of social connectivity, you know, comes across quite often in harbourfront planning and how you connect with the districts. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that if the districts are high-rises, then the harbourfront has to be high-rise. That's not what is intended. Or if the districts are slums, then the harbourfront can look ugly. But we also want to make sure that the harbourfront is designed nicely for recreation, for enjoyment, but there's some social connectivity with the land users in the hinterland. Again, I think some wording to the effect that you will need to take consideration of the social character of the hinterland would give the additional factor for the planners to consider when actually planning the harbourfront. I don't know where it should come from, but maybe it's not entirely linkages, you know, but it's maybe, again, it's a point under sustainable development. And there are other areas which I would commend, for instance, the part on linkages, on giving priority to pedestrians. I think those ought to be in. And as they appear now, I think they look quite good. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Don't you feel like responding or...?
In terms of taking all these comments on board and then trying to do our best to address them all in the spirit of getting a final product.
Thank you. Any other comment? Me? May, please?
To mention 2 points. One, I think this harbour... these principles and guidelines are very well intentioned and very comprehensive. Now, my two question is, what is the next 2 steps? One is, how can we get the government buy-in? What is the government perception? My question is, can we request the integration of these principles into the sustainable development policy-making moduling? That can be at the very forefront of policy-making, that this can be highly regarded and considered. Number two is the public perception. How can we really enhance the public buy-in of these principles? So I would advocate in all our public consultations and our public interactions or dialogues, spare some sessions or time to help the public understand the principles, how these principles come about, and you know what do you benefit from it? So public perception is important. So I would emphasize that every public consultation, there can be some sessions that help public understand the spirit of the planning principles.
Thanks, May, for the 2 points. Any other points, comments? Andrew, yes?
Chairman, if I may, this raises one question which I think is something we haven't yet thought about. In terms of the consultation period, I guess I was expecting this to be rather a passive. We've posted the principles, sit and wait, see who comes and responds, versus a more go out proactively and seek comments, more of an engagement approach on the guidelines. Obviously, we've got a lot of engagement experience, but we haven't in this paper put forwards a particularly well-rounded programme, perhaps, on how to engage the community on these guidelines and whether or not the time frame is adequate for us to do that. But I'm conscious of the time that we have in terms of our term of office, and I guess the fast track of getting the guidelines finished before the HEC comes to a close is paramount in my mind, but that time frame at the moment doesn't allow for a lot of public consultation and a lot of engagement proactively. But I think May's comment alludes to getting community buy-in and engagement would would be a natural sort of way about going to do that.
Thanks, Andrew. Further comment? If not, we thank Andrew and his task group for putting together this very good paper, draft guidelines. The paper is now put forward for adoption by the HEC as a draft document, subject to all those comments, suggestions made by members, including all of our members who spoke earlier. It will be adopted as a working draft only for further consultation with the relevant stakeholder in the weeks and months ahead. So basically, we're asking for your adoption as a working draft for further consultation. Would that be agreeable? And in the meantime, Andrew would take into account all the comments made by our members as part of the consultation process.